They come in all sorts of bright colors and shapes. Children find them irresistible. But these small objects are no toy. They explode when you pick them up or accidentally step on one, ripping apart face and limb, blinding eyes, and deafening ears. The horrific symbol of man's inhumanity to man, cluster bombs litter the landscapes of war zones across the globe and remain silent snares for decades to come. But as of August 1, 2010, cluster bombs are one step closer to becoming the nightmare of the past. The convention banning cluster munitions took effect on that date, becoming binding international law. Well, 108 governments have signed the convention so far, but only 38 of them have ratified it. So I asked Tom Nash, coordinator of the international civil society campaign, the Cluster Munition Coalition, is it realistic, then, to think that anyone is going to take the convention seriously?
Sure. If you think about the speed at which this process has gone, it's actually very unusual and quite remarkable. The negotiating period was only 18 months. Beginning of 2007 to the middle of 2008. Since it opened for signature in December 2008, we've had 108 signatures, and to have within 2 years of it opening for signature, 38 countries ratifying is extremely fast-paced if you compare it to other international treaties like the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, or other such treaties. So we think this swift ratification really does underscore what others have talked about. The Secretary General of the UN talked about the collective revulsion of the international community towards these weapons, and we think this swift ratification really underscores that commitment from the world to prohibit this weapon.
What about the countries that have failed so far to sign up to the convention? They're some of the most conspicuous countries that have failed to do so.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have focused around entry into force on the countries that haven't signed, like the US, Russia, and China. And I suppose that's understandable. But for us, that's missing the point slightly. For us, what's most important is to solve the problem on the ground, to clear land contaminated by cluster munitions, to assist victims of cluster munitions, and to prevent further use in the future. So we are confident that we've got a good mix of countries to allow us to do that. We've got the majority of the countries affected, including Laos and Lebanon, Iraq, Afghanistan. They're on board. We've got many of the biggest donors to mine clearance, cluster bomb clearance, victim assistance around the world. But beyond that, we also think that the treaty's going to force countries to modify their behavior, whether they sign the treaty or not. The best example of this is the Landmines Treaty, where 10 years after that was entered into force, many countries haven't signed it. For example, the U.S., Russia, and China haven't signed that, but the U.S. has not used, produced, or transferred anti-personnel landmines since that treaty was signed. So we think the same phenomenon can be observed, will be observed, with cluster munitions now that the weapon has been thoroughly stigmatized after most of the world has banned it.
Well, in fact, we saw that Israel used cluster munitions in its war on Lebanon in 2006. Also, the U.S.-led coalition employed these munitions, I believe, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. Obviously, the effects of these munitions are going to be around for years to come. What makes these cluster munitions such a heinous weapon?
Yeah, well, cluster munitions are probably one of the worst conventional weapons that exist today. There's two problems, two reasons why they kill too many civilians. First of all, they cover very, very wide areas. They open, it's basically a bomb that opens up in midair after being fired from artillery or rocket or dropped from an aircraft bomb. It opens up over an area and it scatters out hundreds or thousands of these smaller bomblets. And because of that wide area effect, it means when they're used in populated areas, which they very often have been, you're pretty much guaranteed to kill anyone in that area, whether they're civilian or military. But the second problem is that many of these little bombs that come out of the bigger bombs, they don't explode when they hit the ground. And so they lie around unexploded, ready to kill or injure anyone who steps on them or picks them up. And that effect we're seeing in countries like Laos, where even 35 years after the conflict ended, people are still being killed and injured on a regular basis. So it's horrific to imagine that a weapon is killing more people after the conflict than during the conflict.
Desidero esprimere vivo compiacimento per l'entrata in vigore proprio oggi della Convenzione sul bando delle munizioni a grappolo che provocano danni inaccettabili ai civili.
Speaking on the day the treaty came into force on August 1st, Pope Benedict praised the international community for what he called its wisdom, foresight, and capability in implementing what he called a significant achievement in the pursuit of disarmament and international humanitarian rights. He especially remembered the many victims of cluster bombs, whom he said have suffered and continue to suffer serious physical and psychological harm or even death from these insidious weapons, whose long-term presence, he said, on the ground often prevents entire communities from resuming their daily activities. He urged all nations to adhere to the convention and to work more vigorously for disarmament.
E per la realizzazione del bene comune di tutte le persone e di tutti i popoli.
Though most people probably don't know it, the Holy See has played an important role in the adoption of this convention ever since a global ban on cluster munitions was first conceived. So how important is it that the Pope and the Holy See be heard on these issues?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, most people wouldn't know that the Holy See has played a role. I think many people don't really actually even know that the Holy See plays a role in diplomacy. But it certainly is true that for us, as the civil society campaign that led the push, we recognize very strongly that some of the diplomats from the Holy See in Geneva and at the UN were really instrumental in sort of bridging the gaps between different positions that different countries took and having a really positive moral influence, I think, on the process. So for us, it's been a very positive interaction. And I think, you know, the religious leaders around the world from a range of faiths have really provided a kind of moral impetus to the broader global campaign. And that's been, I think, quite an important aspect of the broader civil society outreach to all countries to get them to sign. I think that outreach is going to be important in the years to come as we try to get more countries on board the ban and try to make sure that all governments comply with their obligations to clear up the land, assist the victims, and destroy their stockpiles.
Okay, if you had a wish list of things for the future, besides the ones you just mentioned, what would it be?
Well, I think the first thing is to make sure that we get all of the countries that are affected by cluster bombs to sign this convention, to join as soon as possible. I mentioned some in particular, Vietnam, Cambodia, Serbia, Tajikistan. These countries are affected by cluster bombs. They have no reason not to sign. They stand to gain a lot from signing. And I think for us, it's extremely important that those countries come on board as soon as possible so that we can establish a real forum that will be the frame of reference for solving the cluster bomb problem. And that's what this treaty should be.
I'd just like to mention the United States' policy regarding the cluster munitions. The Pentagon announced that by the end of 2018, the U.S. will no longer use cluster munitions that have a failure rate, they say, of more than 1%. In essence, they're banning all but a tiny fraction of the existing arsenal that the U.S. has. What are you hoping to see from the United States at this point?
Well, I mean, the United States should join the ban on cluster bombs. The United States should join the ban on landmines. But the United States is missing from a number of international treaties, and that is, in the view of many people in civil society, I think, very disappointing. But what's probably most important is that the U.S. stops producing these weapons, stops using these weapons, and stops selling these weapons. The U.S. has already made a commitment to no longer transfer cluster munitions, or the vast majority of their cluster munitions. So that's a positive step, and I think in line with the international direction on this issue, which is to reject the weapon completely. But I think what we want to see from the U.S. is a commitment to, if these weapons that they're saying they're going to remove by 2018, if they're unacceptable in 2018, then they're unacceptable now. So the U.S. needs to accelerate that policy, and it needs to get in line with the vast majority of its allies. 22 out of 28 NATO countries have banned the weapon. It's going to be very difficult for them to be deciding to use this weapon in joint military operations now, given the moral pressure. Countries that partner with the U.S. in military operations now have a legal obligation under the Cluster Bomb Treaty to discourage and try to prevent the U.S. from using cluster munitions. And we're going to be following that very closely from civil society. So I think what we want to see is the U.S. Really accepting that as a world leader, it has a responsibility to promote the protection of civilians and to promote international humanitarian law.
Tom Nash is coordinator of the international civil society campaign, the Cluster Munition Coalition.